5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
When I had come down this hill, I had seen this creature cross the road. It would have ripped my locked door from my truck, extracted me from my vehicle, and there wouldn't have been a damn thing I could have done about it.
This thing, I got to notice in its eyes. Its eyes was real, real evil, real sinister looking. The look it was giving me.
What are you reporting?
Jesus Christ, you better... Sheriff, see ya!
Hello?
Get somebody out here.
What's going on now, sir?
That son of a bitch is about 6'9", I don't know.
Do you see him now, sir?
Yes, I'm looking right at him.
Uh-oh.
Welcome to Sasquatch Chronicles, a place where people share their encounters. Let's start the show. Welcome to the show, everyone. Thanks for being here tonight. You know, I was out with my nephew and my son, and we were shooting fireworks off. You know, it was the second, and I'm not a dick. I'm not going to blow fireworks off at like 11 midnight. You know, I realize some people still work Sundays. And so it was about 9 o'clock. We were shooting fireworks off. Having a great time. Thinking about what great of a country we live in. You know, you look at all the things going on around the world. And it really makes you stop and go, wow, you know, I really am lucky to live in America and to have the freedoms that we have. And, you know, again, it's July 2nd. They've been selling fireworks off all week. And so we decided to shoot some off. It was about 9:20 or so at night, shooting them off, having a great time. Nephew's having a great time. Son's having a great time. My brother's having a great time. Woody, most of you know him from the show. Just enjoying the night, having a great time. And then the cops show up. Apparently, in Washington State, you can't shoot fireworks off unless it's July 4th and only from 9 a.m. until midnight. And next year, you can't shoot any fireworks off, period. So we're told. And the cop was okay. You know, I mean, it was like dealing with any other cop. I mean, he was okay, I guess. I know Woody wasn't taken too kindly to... the cop. It kind of went down like this.
Wide herb, huh? Heard of you.
Listen now, Mr. Kansas Law Dog. Law don't go around here. Savvy?
I'm retired.
Good. That's real good.
Yeah. Yeah, that's real good, Law Dog, because law just don't go around here.
Yeah, I heard you the first time.
There it is. That was our first fireworks show for, I know, Woody's son, and my son was looking forward to it. And, you know, it's kind of frustrating. It's like, really, next year we can't shoot any fireworks off? Kind of ironic you're celebrating Independence Day and being shut down by law enforcement. There's some strange irony to that. But anyway, I guess he was just doing his job. You know, I can't beat the cop up too much for it, but... You know, around the neighborhood, it was like fireworks are going off everywhere. It's like, really? You're going to go around all night long and shut people off from shooting fireworks off? Come on. You know, if it was 3 in the morning, I'd understand. If it was even midnight or 11:30 at night, I would completely understand. But really, I mean, I don't know. I guess I'm bent out of shape. How's your 4th of July weekend going? I hope it's going better than mine. Got a great show planned for you tonight. Going to be speaking with... Jimmy had a very interesting encounter while he was out hunting We'll jump into that here in a moment. If you've had an encounter and you'd like to be on the show, shoot me an email. My email address is wes@sasquatchchronicles.com. And if you get a chance, check out the website, sasquatchchronicles.com. Get additional shows. I know there's a Conspiracy Corner show I'm working on right now. Duke and I did yesterday about giants roaming the earth. So the conspiracy shows are kind of cool. They're outside of Bigfoot, but it's still interesting topics, or at least stuff I find interesting. I hope you do too. Again, if you've seen anything strange out there, please email me, wes@sasquatchchronicles.com. Well, let's jump into it tonight. I want to welcome Jimmy to the show. Jimmy, thanks for coming on, man. I appreciate you being here tonight.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
No, it's my pleasure. If you would, kind of start from the beginning for the audience. I know you had two encounters. Let's kind of start with the first one. For the audience, tell us what you were out doing. Tell us what you ran into and what you experienced.
All right. It was hunting season, probably late October, early November. And I was out with my dad, and he dropped me off on this ridge. Stopped in the road. I walked up to the top of this ridge, and he was going to drive around, come down on the other side of the mountain, way down below, and try to push something up to me. And so I got up to the top, walked over, looked over the edge, you know, through the draw on the other side, found me a nice place to sit down. And sit down about 15, 20 minutes, you know, watching and listening. Heard something down in the draw and stood up. And then all of a sudden it sounded like a freight train was coming up that draw. And probably 5-10 seconds, not very long, a bull elk comes blowing up over top of the ridge and runs right past me. Not a mature bull elk, just a spike, probably his second year, probably a two-year-old spike bull. And I thought that was weird. It freaked me out because he'd run right past me, bounded down the hill, crossed the road, and took off. And I heard something else behind me because I was watching the bull elk as he was leaving. And there's this thing, huge, massive creature chasing after that bull elk. And when it got to the top of the ridge, it put on its brakes and stopped and stared at me. Sorry, hold on just a sec. It you know, really freaked me out. This thing was, oh, mercy. If it was an inch tall, it was 10 foot. And it had to be a minimum of 650, 700 pounds, just huge, hair-covered creature. And stared at me. I stared at it. You know, I was so scared I couldn't move. And I noticed in its right hand, it had a rock. And I think that I interrupted its hunt. We stared at each other for a few seconds. I don't know if I said anything or not. I think I was probably too scared to. And after a couple of seconds, it lifted its hand that had the rock in it straight out to its side and kind of pushed the rock away, you know, just got rid of it. And it turned around. It made two fists as it turned around and screamed and then walked back down the draw. And the impression I got was, that roar that vibrated in my chest was a frustrated roar because I had interrupted its hunt. That's the impression that I got from that situation.
I'd imagine it was pissed. Can you describe for the audience what you actually saw?
All right. You know, I listened to your show quite a bit, and there was nothing about it other than the hair that made me think gorilla. It looked like just an enormous man, you know, disproportionate, but the face looked more human than it did gorilla to me. kind of like a receding hairline. Its head was set farther down in its shoulders. The length of its arms from its elbow to its fingertips seemed to be longer than its upper arm. You know, covered in kind of a charcoal, dark charcoal gray with some hint, tinge of brown to it, kind of brown charcoal. Probably 3-4 inches of hair everywhere. But like I said, it had kind of a receding hairline, big, dark eyes, and just massive, like, you know, the physique of a bodybuilder, but bigger. Just, you know, and where it was standing, I didn't see from the knees down because it didn't come all the way up to the top of that ridge. But from where it was standing, what I could see was from the knees up, it was still towering way over me. You know, it, you know, probably 2 to 3 feet of it is, it, and it was still taller than me.
Did you notice any major facial features before it turned and screamed at you or screamed away in frustration? When you were looking at the face of it, was there anything that stood out to you?
What stood out is how human it looked. You know, it didn't have the low slung jaw like a chimpanzee. It had looked like a boxer's nose. You know, a guy, a boxer that's had his nose broke several times, like a boxer's nose. And the eyes, yeah, they, it looked like they were, I mean, looking through me. They're just, the eyes were extremely intense.
How close were you to the creature?
Maybe 20, 25 yards.
Oh, wow. So you were really close.
Yeah.
What was it about the eyes?
I don't know. It just helped. How intense its gaze was when it stared at me. I don't remember seeing any whites, just big, dark, dark eyes.
I'm curious, did the expression change on the face? Was there any expressions you noticed?
Like right before it turned around, like a sigh, like, pardon me, but it's like, damn it. You know, that from having been focused on something where you're intent on doing something and then something interrupts you and you think, shoot, you know, that it changed from being intent on accomplishing a task to frustration. If that makes sense. And then when it turned around and let out that roar, and you know, I could feel my organs vibrate. It was just deafening.
Yeah, I would imagine that would have scared the hell of me. At least it turned and went the other way out of frustration. It probably figured you were gonna shoot at it.
Yeah, well, I did have my rifle. I did not put my rifle up to my shoulder. It was laying in the crook of my left arm, and you know, not having, you know, whites the eyes to tell exactly where it's looking. I could, you know, it's looking at me, but I don't think I realized whether it looked down and saw my rifle or if it, I'm sure it saw it, but that, I don't know if that helped the situation, it seeing my rifle. I'm sure they know what a rifle is. But if this thing wanted to either chuck that rock at me or come after me, I don't think I would have had time to put my rifle up to my shoulder and get a shot off.
Yeah, no, I tend to agree with you. It's interesting that you caught one in mid-hunt, hunting a bull elk down. I bet that bull elk was running for its life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, and you know, if you see an elk in the wild and it comes up and it sees you, it's not going to run right past you. It's going to take off another direction. And that thing run right past me, didn't even care that I was there.
Yeah, you were probably the lesser of two evils in that situation.
Yep.
You know, probably figured it'd take its chances with you. And I've heard that from hunters before. You know, I've talked to a lot of hunters that have had deer and elk run right past them. And then all of a sudden they run into the creature, or what they perceive to be a creature, coming in and stopping at the tree line where they're at. And I think with these prey like deer and elk and all these other things, I really think we're the lesser of two evils. They'll take our chances with us, even if we're armed and everything else.
As I thought about it later, what I thought is, animals are a lot more intelligent than people give them credit for. I think that elk intentionally put me between it and the creature. I think that's why it came right over by me, because when it passed me, I don't know if I'm thinking too much about that, but I tend to think that elk decided to put me between itself and the creature.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like it. And so it's interesting. So the creature had a rock in its hand, and when it threw the rock off, and this is going to seem like an odd question, but it's more or less for myself. When it threw the rock off, did it throw it overhanded? Did it throw it sidearm? Did it just kind of drop it? Well, how did it throw the rock off?
Well, when I saw it, it was kind of hanging down at its side. When it got rid of the rock, it lifted its arm up straight out to its side. I don't know what the purpose was, but how if you have something and you just kind of push it, roll it off your fingertips and just push it out to the side. He didn't throw it. He didn't throw it overhand or sidearm. He just lifted it up and then pushed it away with his fingers. But it didn't just go 2 or 3 feet. It flew away from him. Does that make any sense? I mean, he just held it up and then, with a flick of the wrist, got rid of it. But this rock flew 40, 50 feet away.
Yeah, that does make sense. And that's kind of the why I asked you that is I've talked to a lot of people who said when they throw the rock, in your situation, it's different. It sounds like he was just getting rid of the rock. But in some situations, I've spoken to witnesses who've seen him throw rocks, and they say, they don't throw them like people. They don't throw them overhanded like a person would. It's kind of side-armed. It's kind of almost like if you ever watch a gorilla or a chimp throw a rock or throw something at you, there's a particular way that they throw it, and that's kind of why I asked. It turns around. You said it threw its hands in the air and then roared?
Well, it like clenched its fist. After it got rid of the rock and turned around, it like when you if you tense up your whole body and scream in frustration, that's kind of the move it made. Like making a fist and just clenching everything up and screaming.
Yeah, that's interesting. So the creature turns around, it exits, and what did you do next?
I walked down to the road and started walking in the direction I knew my dad would be coming back up when he came around.
At the time, did you know what it was?
I didn't. It's like when I heard your story, all I could think was monster. And after thinking about it, it was probably another hour or so until my dad came back. And then I started thinking about there was an old man in the town that said that a Sasquatch had pushed a tree over on him, and everybody in town made fun of him. And then it's while I had that time to think, that's when I thought, I wonder if that's what it is. I bet that's a Bigfoot. I bet that's a Sasquatch. But when it happened, all I could think was monster. But as I had the time to sit there on top of that mountain and think, first thing I thought of was the old man that had said that a Sasquatch had pushed a tree over on him or at him. But I still, that's what I thought it possibly was, but I still wasn't sure. If it was a Bigfoot, I wasn't going to say anything about it because I knew that the way back then you were treated, if you said you saw a Bigfoot, you were a kook, and your life would basically be over. I mean, everybody in, small town mentality. So at that point, I just chose not to say anything about it. It wasn't until after listening to your show that I finally, it's been within the last year that I told my wife briefly about it. And I mentioned it to my dad. I asked if he remembered that time that was at Moose Creek when he dropped me off. And I told him that I told my dad was, I think I saw Bigfoot. It's when I first talked to you last night is the first time I ever tried to recount, you know, exactly what happened. And like I told Jerry earlier, I'm sorry, I didn't realize how shaken up I would be trying to, you know, tell the whole story. I'd never tried to tell it before.
Yeah, it's terrifying because you do relive it. It's like you and I were just talking about before we went on air. You know, I mean, I've told my story a million times, and each time you do relive it. I guess after so many times of telling it, you kind of become numb to it a little bit. But in your mind, it's like you can still see the pictures playing as you're telling it. And you're right. I mean, that's, you know, thinking you saw a monster. I mean, that's what I said for the longest time. I thought it was a monster. I didn't know what it was that I ran into.
And, you know, I've heard other people say it before, but it does. It changes everything. Your whole outlook, knowing that something that isn't, is, you know, laughable, something that isn't supposed to exist, does exist. You know, it changes you. And I've heard people say, you know, do you believe in Bigfoot? And people say, yes, I believe. And there's the people that say, I don't believe in Bigfoot. I'm a knower. And I put myself in that category. I don't believe in Bigfoot. I know Bigfoot exists.
No, I can understand that. And you're right. It does change you. You know, every witness I've ever spoken with or had on the show, I can tell you it changes you. It definitely changes you. Changes your outlook on a lot of things. A lot of things that you'd probably call BS on. And I'm talking about outside of Bigfoot. You start to realize, well, maybe people aren't lying. And I'm talking about outside of Bigfoot.
Exactly.
Just weird things, aliens, whatever. You start to realize after a while that maybe people aren't full of crap. Maybe there's the other things out there I don't know about that I used to call BS on. How many years later was it that you had your second encounter?
Probably 3 or 4. I know that was that first one. I had just got my hunting license, so I was either 14 or 15. And my second one was, I was older and I was able to go into the mountains. I'd able to camp by myself. I grew up in a small town and I was, you know, our closest McDonald's was 120 miles away. If that gives you an idea how small my town was. What we did for fun, me and my friends, was go in the mountains on our motorcycles. And I spent a lot of time in the mountains, you know, all over. And I was probably 17 or 18 when my second one happened.
Well, tell us about that one. What happened with that encounter?
All right. Well, it was probably midsummer. And back then, you couldn't go down to Bass Pro and buy you a tree stand. There were tree stands, but they were $1,000. What I did was go down to the Steel and Ranch Supply and buy some foot and a half long spikes. And we always had lumber, 2x4s and such. And I would make 5 or 6 or 7 trips on my motorcycle up into the mountains where I'd found a spot in a tree. And I'd nail the spikes into the tree and build a permanent tree stand in a spot that I knew would be a good hunting area. And I was, this is still in Idaho. I'd found a nice spot on the edge of a meadow, a really nice big Douglas fir tree. And I got my spikes in the tree and got the base started and had my backpack. I had a jug of water, had my backpack with my snacks. I always had deer jerky. You know, every hunting season we'd turn at least one deer that my family had got would be turned into jerky. So we always had stuff for camping. And then I left my backpack hanging on a nail up, you know, 30 feet up in the tree. And when I came back with another load of equipment, you know, I couldn't take a whole lot because I was on a Yamaha 175. They had a milk crate bungee corded to the back fender. And I came back and my backpack was on the ground and everything that was to eat in it was gone. But there was stuff in there that, you know, if somebody was going to get into my backpack, they would have just grabbed the whole backpack and took off. because, you know, there was a knife in there. There was a few tools and, you know, other stuff. I don't remember exactly, but all that was gone out of it was the food. But what I thought found weird is if it was a small animal or a cat, a bobcat or a mountain lion or even a bear, my backpack would have been destroyed, but it wasn't. It was unzipped. And that, you know, confused me. It's either there's somebody up here, and it, where I had decided to put that tree stand was not easy to find. It was way back in there. There's probably about 2 miles on deer trails that I had to ride my motorcycle to get back to where I built that tree stand. And, you know, I didn't think anything of it. It took me probably 2-3 days to build that tree stand, and twice, you know, leaving my back, if I left my backpack there and it had food in it, the food was gone when I came back on the next trip. And, you know, I never thought to look for prints on the ground. I don't think I would have seen any anyway. It was, you know, forest. It's Idaho pine forest. There's probably 3 inches of pine needles on the ground at all times. But, you know, I got that tree stand built, and then I didn't go back up there until hunting season. And then later that hunting season, I'd climbed up in my tree stand, and early in the morning, about an hour after the sun came up, the deer had come up the draw just like I thought they would from getting a drink down in the river. And the daytime, they'd go back up in the mountains, and I got a deer. And I, you know, dressed it out, hung it in a tree, probably about 40, 50 yards away from the tree my stand was in. And I was it in the morning or evening? Anyway, whatever the case, after I got the deer gutted, I hung it in a tree, probably about 15, 20 feet up. And I decided to spend the night in my tree stand. I'd done it several times before. And in the middle of the night, I heard something, you know, something woke me up, and I saw something trying to get the deer that I had hanging in the tree. And it looked, what I saw looked very similar to my first encounter, just a lot smaller. I think it was a juvenile Sasquatch that was trying to get the deer that I had hanging. And just a side note, there was a rumor in town that some people from out of town had killed a large male and a female Sasquatch, you know, early in the hunting season. And if that's the case, I think this might have been the offspring of the Sasquatches that were supposedly killed. Because all I saw was this young one. I didn't see anything else other than this one. And it was making noise, grunting, and, you know, trying to get my deer that I had hanging. And I, you know, being half asleep, you know, started yelling expletives at whoever was trying to get my deer first. You know, my initial thought was that somebody was trying to steal my deer and didn't realize I was up there. It was later, after I, you know, yelled at it a few times and started coming down, that it took off. And that's when I realized that, holy crap, that wasn't a person. That looked more like what I'd seen a couple years before. Because it wasn't until it started running off that it got into the moonlight that I actually saw what it was. All I saw was a dark figure, because where it was hanging was in the trees, but it was a nice moonlit night. And as it took off running away from me is when I actually saw the creature when it got into the bright moonlight.
Can you describe what you saw?
That one looked more like a chimpanzee, but I think that is just because it was smaller. It was gangly. It wasn't, you know, didn't look like a bodybuilder. That's what makes me think it was a juvenile. And I asked, you know, not knowing exactly, but I figured that thing was about my size. It looked more like a big chimpanzee, you know, body-wise. I didn't get a good chance to see its face being in the dark, I mainly saw it running away from me, and it did run away on all four. That's what made me think it looked a lot like a chimp.
That's very interesting, because I actually spoke to a witness. I can't even tell you how many shows ago it was, but they were talking about seeing a very large bodybuilder gorilla slash man on two legs walking upright. And then the witness had described seeing what appeared to be two very small chimpanzees on all fours following this gorilla, or what they described as a gorilla, in size and everything else. But it was interesting because he said they looked like two different, not completely two different creatures, but they had a different look. It was more gangly. I want to say that's the term he used. He said it just reminded him it wasn't the monster bodybuilder type by any means. More like a teenager, you know, like a teenager male before it grows into.
Yeah,
you know, exactly. There's a difference between like a guy who's 28 years old and a guy who's 18 years old.
When you're that awkward,
right?
When you're nothing but knees and elbows, and awkward, and you're in a big growth spurt, and you look funny. That's what I think was going on with this one. It was in that awkward, you know, prepubescent or right during puberty, when, you know, in humans, when you've got that really awkward look,
it would still scare, it still worried the hell out of me. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And when I, you know, because I was half asleep, if I would have realized what it was, even though it wasn't a big old huge one, you know, I would have never started down after the tree and yelling at it. If I would have realized, if I hadn't have been woken up and asleep, I probably would have let the thing take the deer. I don't think I would have came down after the tree, but what I was thinking was, there's some hillbilly up here trying to steal the deer that I just killed. That's what my sleepy mind was thinking, and I'm going to run him off. And I don't know how I was going to run him off, because I left my weapon up on my tree stand, and here I am down 30 feet below it.
Yeah, no, and I understand that. I mean, that would be the first logical thing that I think that would go through most people's mind. It's just interesting. And it's sad, you know, that they shot the... And we don't have to go into that whole story, because I know there's more to the story and other people involved, so we don't have to go into that. But it's interesting, you know, it's probably looking for easy food. I've heard of many encounters, especially when you look at historical accounts. A lot of the old trappers will talk about these things coming into your camp, raiding your backpacks, raiding your packs, taking food, and leaving in the middle of the night. And you're right, if it would have been a person, they would have just taken the whole backpack. Or they would have taken, you know, the knife or the expensive stuff out of the bag. They wouldn't have bothered with the food.
Exactly. And, you know, after I thought about it, and, you know, at the time I wasn't thinking about what I had heard about the somebody killing a male and female, and I wasn't thinking about that. After that, I started, it's hard to explain. I started like, holy crap, these things are real and they have families. This was a child. And then I started feeling bad. I can't explain it, but does that make any sense? I started feeling bad for that young one. If
no, it makes sense.
If it lost its parents, and, you know, I couldn't imagine if you're out in the wild and you lose the people that take care of you. That's how I know it's I don't know how to explain it, but I felt sorry for it.
No, I understand that. That makes sense. I think anyone with a heart, that would make sense too. It makes sense to me, you know, even something, you know, and that's kind of why I kind of used to struggle with hunting a lot, because I used to see the baby deers and I thought, man, you know what I mean? It's like, here I am. I'll just go down to the store and buy my beef. I mean, it sounds stupid, but I get what you're saying. You understand there's a family unit, and, you know, if it would have been a person, it wouldn't have tried to take a whole deer out. You know, you got to quarter those deers out. You got to pack them out. You don't just pick it up, throw it over your shoulder and walk out with it. And so, you know, a person just doesn't make sense in that situation. And I've heard of them, you know, jacking deers out of the trees and taking them. I've talked to poachers and hunters who have shot deers and elk and said a gorilla showed up, threw it over its shoulder, and walked off with it. So they do that sort of thing.
You know, and listening to, like, your show, I like listening to Bear and Tumbo on the Bigfoot Outlaws, and, you know, hearing similar type stories of the hunters, like Bear and Tumbo say, if they hear a gunshot, that's like the dinner bell. They'll come and try to find what you've shot and steal it from you. You know, found that out, that's years later, you know, listening to their show, but, you know, it makes sense that, especially if this thing was all by itself, I imagine it was starving. If it isn't able to hunt yet, that was the idea I got, that this thing was hungry.
Yeah, and it is. I mean, it's not too far off. There's reports of grizzly bears stalking hunters here in the United States, and they wait for them to make a kill, and then they'll go in and take the kill. They're not necessarily stalking the hunters. They're just waiting for the gunshots to go off to go get the easy meal. And it would make sense that these things do the same thing.
Yep. Yep. I can see that. You know, I've heard stories, you know, and putting two and two together, you know, somebody's shooting a deer and it runs off, and they follow the blood trail till the blood trail stops. You know, you can tell that it's gushing blood, and then just it stops and they can't ever find the deer again. And they think it's real well, it must have stopped bleeding, you know. I used to think, yeah, well, it probably stopped bleeding. It probably died, you know, 4 or 5 miles away. Now I think, you know what? Something probably picked that stinking deer up and run away with it. That's why you didn't find it. And that's why the blood trail stopped, is because something picked it up and absconded with it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was talking to a hunter who shot a bull elk, a very large bull elk. And he said that he shot it in the throat. And it dropped not far off from where he had shot it. He walks up to it, puts another bullet in it just to make sure it's dead. Had its eyes open, tongue out. And he goes, I heard it take its last breath and this thing was dead. Had his dad wait behind. He goes to get his knife, comes back, and the whole bull elk's gone. He said there was no blood trail. It's like something just picked it up and walked off with it. And it's interesting, prior to that happening to him, he was getting rocks thrown at him. And he couldn't figure out where the rocks were coming from. And so I think you're right. I think that they, you know, an easy meal is an easy meal. Yeah, especially if you're hanging a deer up like you were. It's easy pickings for these things.
You know, be as cautious as they are, I think the hunger, it had to know that I was there. And I'm sure that it had watched me all day. But the hunger is what I think pushed it to try to come in and take that from me after I fell asleep.
Did you ever give up hunting after this?
No, I didn't. I hunted quite a few years. Actually, even after I moved away from my hometown, I'd come back during hunting season. Actually, I'd bring friends with me from out of town because the hunting back there was in my hometown was so good. You know, being in this, I would tell people, you know, when I lived in Colorado, I told my friends, you know, the elk out here are small in Colorado. Said the elk in Colorado are the size of our mule deer in Idaho. And that they'd call BS on me. And I said, well, I'll prove it this hunting season. We'd go back to Idaho and prove it. Our mule deer are the size of elk most of the states. And our elk are huge.
Yeah.
But, it, you know, the whole center of that state of Idaho is primitive area. There's no roads, no motorized vehicles, you know. I think it's either 2.5 million or 3 million square miles of primitive area. And so there's, you know, there's camps back there and people can jet boat up the river or fly in. There's a couple of flying ranches back there. I used to work at one of them when I was younger. But, you know, for the most part, the animals have no pressure back there. Humans can't get to them. So they do have a chance to get a lot bigger. And that's why I think also the first one that I saw was as big as it was, because the animal, the food sources back there are so plentiful. Maybe that was just my thought on why, you know, I've heard people say they were, you know, 6 to 7 or 7 to 8 feet tall. And this thing, the first one I saw, like I told you, if it was an inch tall, it was 10 foot at the very least. And a minimum of 650, probably more. This thing was just massive.
Yeah, no, I believe you. And you got a good look at that first one. If you were to, if someone were to ask you what you thought Bigfoot was, what would you say to them? And there's no wrong answer.
You know, from my Native American heritage, I would have to go with, it's not human, but it's another type of people. I personally do not think ape. I think maybe a primitive type of human, or maybe not human, primitive type of people. But like I said earlier, there was nothing that I saw that suggested ape to me other than the hair, but nothing about its features. You know, I know the proportions were wrong, kind of like a gorilla's are, but that's not what I saw. You know, I don't know how to explain it, but what I saw was more human to me. I might be wrong, but that's just my opinion.
No, I understand that. I mean, I get what you're saying on that. And you're right. I mean, I've talked to a lot of hunters who've had them in their scope, and, you know, they could have easily pulled the trigger and hit him with a headshot. And a lot of times you ask hunters why they didn't shoot it, and they'll say, well, it kind of reminded me of a person. There was something about it where I couldn't pull the trigger. It wasn't a deer. It wasn't a bear. There was just something odd about it. So I understand that. Like I said, there's no wrong answer. You know, we can only go off of what we've experienced. You know, you get down south, and they'll tell you that it's a overgrown chimpanzee. You know, you get up, you know, in different areas, and they'll describe them different ways, and we can only go off of our own experiences. But, you know, I do hear that a lot from people when they see these things. They're like, hey, man, it reminded me more of a person than it did really an animal, just the way it acted. And it's interesting, in your encounter, that frustration, that hot temper of tossing the rock and just being completely frustrated as it walked off, that you screwed up its hunt, or its impression was that you screwed up its hunt.
Then that's what makes me think more a type of person, because it showed human type emotion, the frustration. You know, you would have had to seen it. It's like, you know, I don't want to say that, but, you know, just think, when something has ticked you off so bad that you've just got to scream and walk away from it. That's the exact type of emotion that I saw. It was frustration. I mean, exactly. Just, if I was, something had screwed me up like that, I would be frustrated also. And that's what I saw, was that human type emotion. And that's what makes me think, you know, if it was a gorilla or an ape, I don't think it would have been able to exhibit that type of emotion. I could be wrong, but I just don't think so.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, sometimes a lot of the non-human primates do exhibit, I think we're closer to non-human primates than most people realize. I think of Coco the gorilla, and I've told this story before. Coco the gorilla was, and do you know Coco the gorilla, the one that can sign language?
Yeah.
What was fascinating to me is I watched this whole thing on, and I, from time to time I watch, I'm a big nerd when it comes to stuff like this, which is strange because I don't like the primate exhibit. It's the one exhibit I'll avoid in the zoo. For whatever reason, I just, that's neither here nor there. But anyway, what was interesting about Coco the gorilla, she was trying to break out of the place where she was at, and she was trying to go through the window, and she was halfway through the window. They catch her and yell at her, and she comes back in, and they ask her what she was doing, and she said that she was going out for a smoke. She had signed that she was going out for a smoke because she saw the humans going out for a smoke. It just fascinated me that, you know, I don't think we're that far off from non-human primates, some more than others, but I get what you're saying, that the emotions you see. You know, I've talked to witnesses that have seen these things. I had one guy on one time. He said it had like crazy bag lady moments. Like, you'd almost see someone with mental issues in a downtown city walking around, gibbering, throwing its hands in the air, just acting like a crazy person. And he said that that's what it reminded him of. It wasn't really animal-like. It reminded him of more of someone, you know, a human that had mental issues.
I can see that. Now, something I found interesting, you know, scientists are always looking for the missing link, you know, between humans and everything. And something I've just tossed around in my head is, what if humans are the missing link? You know, we're the what's in between Sasquatch and something else. You know, I don't buy into the whole, you know, it's just something that I thought that popped into my head a while ago is, what if humans are the missing link?
I get what you're saying.
If science is looking at it all wrong, trying to find the missing link, what if we're the missing link? And I just thought that was funny to me.
Yeah, well, I mean, I understand that, you know, with these things, it's strange. And that's why I like to ask people who've had up close personal encounters with these things, what do you think they are? In my mind, I think non-human primate, but I realize I'm not too arrogant to realize I could be 100% wrong on my thoughts on this. But they have a lot of animalistic type behavior too as well. But in the same breath, they have very, you know, when you like you in your situation, it runs off, it's frustrated, it's angry, and it shows those emotions, which, you know, and I'm not trying to argue with you on what you're saying. I go back to, I think of this chimpanzee I watched, and the chimpanzee in this, it was doing something, I can't remember, it was doing something with a puzzle or something like that, and they were kind of screwing with the chimpanzee on giving it treats and whatnot. And it exhibited revenge on the way it acted. It exhibited, which is a very human-like, very human-like trait, the trait of revenge. And it's interesting because when you look at a lot of these primates, you know, everyone thinks dumb ape or dumb monkey. I don't think there's anything. I don't think a dumb ape or a dumb monkey exists. I think they're a lot smarter than most people realize.
I agree with you there. I think that, well, and I think most animals, you know, people underestimate animals for the most part. I think most animals are a lot smarter than humans give them credit for. And I know that, you know, some apes, chimpanzees, you know, have the ability to problem solve, but, you know, it's, you know, and all I have to go by is what I saw. And had I more experiences, I might change my mind. But, you know, there's people out there like that have had a tremendous more amount of experiences than I have. My main, that the first one was the only one that I can really say that, you know, can speak to. And had I more experiences and noticed more behaviors, I might change my opinion. But just from what I saw, that's what I think.
Yeah, and like I said, there's no wrong answer. I mean, I tend to agree with you. I think that these things are closer to us than most people realize. In my mind, I still think wild animal. But again, at the end of the day, I could be completely wrong.
Yeah, I don't think that, you know, they're human. But, you know, I totally agree that they are a wild animal. I don't think that, you know, I love your guys' term, the flute players. But also that's dangerous, too, because those people think that these are teddy bears, and they are not. These things, have, you know, the strength that they possess, you know, can pop your head like a zit. You know, in a fraction of a second, they can kill you. And I think it's a mistake for the people that think that these things are lovable, cuddly creatures. And I don't think that at all. They are a wild animal. They just, to me, exhibit more human tendencies than other animals.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with you on that. It's the flute player thing I came up with, I kind of regret even saying that on the air now, but it's because I used to get so frustrated with people in the Bigfoot world, and I've kind of backed out of the whole Bigfoot world just because there's too many Anyway, I just backed out of it. But it used to frustrate me because people would say, feed them, or you can go out and play the flute for them and give them apples. And it's not reality. I just don't believe that. It's not reality with these things. Now, are they, are these things like a grizzly bear? No, I think they think a little bit more like a grizzly bear. I think in your situation, if that would have been a grizzly bear, that grizzly bear would have mowed you down and probably wouldn't have even thought twice about mowing you down. But with these things, there's obvious thought. There's frustration. Does it really want to do battle with you? It's not really what it wanted. It wanted the elk. It really didn't want you. And now you have a rifle. And so there's a potential chance of it getting hurt. Like you said, the very human-like emotions where it turns around, walks off, just kind of screams and roars in frustration, tosses its rock aside. In reality, could it have mowed you down? Absolutely. And there wouldn't have been a damn thing you could have done about it.
There wouldn't have been.
But I think that it just didn't, in that situation, it just didn't, it wasn't worth the fight. And that shows thought. That shows thought process.
And that's what I was thinking when it was standing there staring at me, it was thinking. You know, it was contemplating its next move. You know, that's what I think is, well, it's staring at me what seemed like hours, you know, probably maybe 15 seconds that it stared me down and it was thinking, what do I do? And that's why, you know, it just stood there and stared at me. And that's when it finally turned away in frustration, got rid of its rock and walked off. I think in that situation, I was very lucky. You know, listening to your guys' show and the research that I had done, if it would have been a rogue male, I think I would have been in trouble. I think this probably had to be part of a group and not a rogue male. Or if it would have been, you know, some of the other type of creatures, the Native American word, the Janosqua, if it would have been one of the mean ones, I think I could have been in trouble. But I think this was probably a family unit, maybe the alpha, maybe one of, if this thing wasn't the alpha male, I'd hate to see the alpha. Knowing what, you know, research I've done and what, you know, the researchers who I respect and looked up to have said, if this would have been a rogue male, I think I would have been in trouble.
Yeah, it's hard to say. One thing you said there that I caught on to, and I don't know if you get a chance to read the blog from the 29th when I posted it, the creature seemed to want to leave as much as I did. That's one thing that when I spoke to the witness on the phone, that's one thing he said. He goes, it was calculating. It wasn't like looking at a bear. It wasn't like looking at a deer. It was calculating its next move. It ended up backing off in his situation, and he was just as terrified. He was backing off. But it's interesting, when you see the eyes of these creatures, there's calculation going on. It's not just a blank stare.
It wasn't like looking at a wolf, standing there staring you down, because the wolf is thinking, maybe that was a bad analogy, but you know what? I think you understand what I'm thinking is, while it's standing there staring at me, it's not exactly, it wasn't a blank stare. There was thought going on in its head. It was like, I think it was, what do I do next? Here we are. And I agree with the fact that it wanted out of that situation as much as I did, because it had the rock. I mean, if it would have chucked that rock, I don't think that it would have missed. And it saw my rifle. Like you said, I don't think I was worth the risk, because I did have a rifle. I think they know what they are. And if it tried to do something to me, there's the possibility that it could have got hurt. So it chose to walk away. And I am so glad that it did.
Yeah, no, I'm glad it did too. And I think a lot of situations are like that. I think they're opportunistic, but they're not stupid. You know, they will calculate and try and figure out if they, you know, what's it going to, you know, who knows with these things. I kind of get the same impression you do, though. Yes. They calculate their next move, and is it worth the risk or not? And in your situation, it just wasn't. There was a chance it could have probably walked away just as hurt. You probably, it would have gotten you. Don't get me wrong. I think it would have had you, but you might have gotten off a shot or two before it got to you. It's a fascinating encounter, Jimmy. It really is. And I'm really glad that it walked off. And,
you know, I was hearing everybody's encounters and mine. I have never heard anybody's like it. I was kind of afraid to tell it because it's like I have never heard one like it. And I've listened to hundreds and hundreds of encounters and, you know, it still shakes me up. I'm trying to tell it tonight. It still has me, you know, like you said, it brings everything back to the front, but it does. One thing I want to thank you for is being able to talk about it has helped. I didn't realize, you know, holding it in for so long, how much it has affected me. It did on one part, you know, an obsession with want to know more about them and know what they are. But I don't know. It feels like there's a weight lifted off of my chest, being able to tell somebody about it that without judgment. I really appreciate that.
No, I appreciate it, Jimmy. And I want to thank you for coming on the show and sharing it. I think it helps others. I think more people run into these things. It's like I was telling someone the other day, what you hear on the show is probably a quarter of a half a percent of the encounters. I know people hear the show, they think all these people are having encounters. I think it's a fraction of the people that have actually run into these things. You know, we gather more information as more people come forward on their behavior. You know, it's like I was just telling you the other day, I mean, just based on types. You'd be surprised how you could nail down the type of creatures people run into based on location. I truly believe there's different types of these things. And I know Bob Garrett used to tell me the ones that look more human are generally smarter and have are just more intelligent creatures and are less apt to attack you. He said the ones that look more chimp-like, the ones that are have more of that appearance, have zero qualms about attacking you. And that's what he runs into down there in Texas. And so you learn so much from witnesses coming forward. I just can't thank you enough for coming on the show.
Well, I appreciate you letting me. I believe it has helped. Thank you very much.
No, thank you, Jimmy, for coming on. And thank you guys for listening. That's it for tonight. I hope everyone has a safe and happy 4th of July. Until next time, everyone, have a great night. Spill it away.